Good morning, early birds. You've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. Today we have stories about prescribed burns across the state and a final cleanup deal for the Butte Superfund. It's Friday, October 18th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Montana Lieutenant Governor Mike Cooney is asking his opponents in the Democratic primary race for governor to sign a pledge to limit outside spending and self-funding in their campaigns. The pledge was called a media stunt by one opponent. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
Cooney this week offered the pledge to donate to charity half of the value of any independent expenditure made by outside organizations, individuals, or corporations that benefit his campaign. The pledge also says for every dollar of independent wealth a candidate gives their campaign, the candidate must also donate 50 cents to a charity of their opponent's choosing. Cooney signed the pledge during a press conference Wednesday, but he told MTPR afterward that if the other three candidates in the race don't agree, he's not committing to campaign by the pledge's conditions.
I don't know why they wouldn't be willing to sign this, quite honestly. But if they're not, I mean, I also have to run a serious campaign. We'll see. But I mean, I can't tie my hands to the point where I can't run a reasonable campaign.
Cooney raised more than $250,000 over the last fundraising quarter, far more than House Minority Leader Casey Schreiner, who raised more than $37,000, or former legislator Riley Neal, who brought in more than $700. Whitney Williams, the most recent candidate in the Democratic primary for governor, launched her campaign after the last finance reporting deadline. Neal is the only candidate outside of Cooney who says they support the pledge. The campaign manager for Williams' campaign accused Cooney of playing political games and called the pledge a media stunt. Schreiner did not directly say whether he supports the pledge. He pointed to his work in the state legislature supporting campaign finance reform to remove the, quote, detrimental influence of money in politics, unquote. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
The Johnson & Johnson Company has agreed to pay nearly $117 million in a multi-state settlement, including Montana, over allegations it deceptively marketed its pelvic mesh products. The products, also called transvaginal mesh, are material surgically implanted in cases when a woman's pelvic organs have sagged or when they suffer from stress urinary incontinence, bladder leakage in certain situations. The Associated Press reports incontinence is estimated to affect 3 to 17% of women and sometimes become severe after age 70. According to the Montana Department of Justice, the 41-state investigation found Johnson & Johnson and its subsidiary, Ethicon Incorporated, misrepresented the safety and effectiveness of the devices and failed to sufficiently disclose risks of their use. The department says Montana will receive $1.4 million under the settlement. It's fall, and that means it's prescribed fire season in Montana. Wildland managers are now intentionally setting fires to reduce forest fuel buildup or to restore native vegetation. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien has this roundup.
Two prescribed wildfire operations just north of Missoula produced dense smoke that degraded air quality to unhealthy levels Wednesday night and Thursday morning. As weather forecasters predicted, though, a cold front pushed into the region Thursday afternoon, increasing winds, which helped dissipate the smoke. Missoula City County air quality specialist Sarah Cofield says more cool, wet weather is in the forecast, which will probably further improve air quality. Local wildland managers are considering using more prescribed burns in the Missoula area to help mitigate wildfire risks. Cofield says these projects are delicate balancing acts.
There's a lot of great reasons to have prescribed burning, and I personally think it's really important for ecosystem to have prescribed burning happening, and it can help change wildfire behavior if you have done a good job with your forest management. But it is always that balance of trying to make sure that we time those burns as best we can so they don't impact public health.
A prescribed fire in Yellowstone National Park this week focused on invasive weeds. Wednesday's burn, about 3 miles northwest of Gardner, targeted the seeds of two annual weeds, wheatgrass and desert alyssum. Roy Rankin is a vegetation specialist with the park. He describes those weeds, wheatgrass in particular, as beasts that consume native grasslands in the Intermountain West.
I mean, it just takes off, and what it does is just sucks all the moisture out of the soil to the detriment of, you know, perennials, grass and shrub, particularly grass species, that are only just turning on their machinery for the summer. So, yeah, it has that beast mode mentality to it.
Rankin says Wednesday's 16-acre burn went off without a hitch. The Bureau of Land Management, meanwhile, plans burns in Silverbow, Beaverhead, Lewis and Clark, and Jefferson counties in the coming months. BLM ignited a 270-acre burn in the Bull Mountains north of Billings Thursday. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche visited that project site and files this story.
The prescribed fire aimed to prevent the kind of wildfire that decimated the area in 2012. A handful of firefighters Thursday walked along the edges of a forested valley and left a trail of fire behind them. Controlled burns like this one eat up dry grasses and other fuels a wildfire would feed off of. It's the third time over 5 years the BLM has done a burn like this in the area. That's according to BLM forestry technician Tag O'Donnell.
I'm glad that we're getting these going in here. You know, the Bull Mountains have a long fire history, large catastrophic fires, lots of loss of infrastructure.
O'Donnell specifically referenced the Dahl Fire. In 2012, lightning caused a 22,000-acre fire that burned more than 70 homes in the area.
Everybody got concerned and started taking fuels mitigation actions on their private property, or a number of landowners did, and we're just kind of moving on from there.
He said their intended burn area of 270 acres includes federal, state, and private lands. O'Donnell said the burn is expected to take just one day.
As soon as the sun goes down, the temperature is going to go down with it and the humidity is going to come up, and we're going to lose our burn window.
BLM spokesperson Al Nash said around 30 people from BLM, the U.S. Forest Service, and the Billings Fire Department were on site. He said he doesn't have a cost estimate for this operation.
But if you look at the cost per acre of a prescribed fire versus what it costs to respond to a wildland fire, this is extraordinarily cost effective.
Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
A U.S. judge temporarily blocked the Trump administration from easing rules on mining, drilling, and grazing across millions of acres in seven western states, including Montana, saying such activities left unchecked were likely to harm a struggling bird species. The judge said the administration's changes would likely cause further declines in populations of greater sage grouse. The ground-dwelling bird is at the center of a bitter conflict over how much of the region's expansive public land should be developed. This week, the parties in charge of the Superfund cleanup of the Butte Hill and the Urban Creek corridors agreed on a final cleanup deal. Montana Public Radio's Nora Sachs has more on this turning point in the mining city's decades-long Superfund saga.
Since the end of 2017, the Environmental Protection Agency, the state, county, and former oil company Atlantic Richfield have been hashing out the details of a final, legally binding cleanup deal for the Superfund site known as Butte Priority Soils. That deal, or consent decree, will spell out exactly who is doing what and paying for each remaining puzzle piece of Butte's extensive and ongoing mine waste cleanup. On Thursday, EPA announced that the parties to that deal had successfully finished negotiations the night before and finally put their pens down. For Butte's longtime Superfund coordinator, John Sesso, that moment was full of joy and relief.
I'm most excited about moving forward. We have languished far too long on quibbling over certain details, and now that we've got those details worked out, we can start getting work done and move our community forward.
Depending on how you count, this day has been either 32, 13, or 2 years in coming. The entire Butte area was added to the existing Silverbow Creek Superfund site back in 1987. In 2006, the Superfund parties started brokering a final cleanup deal, but the confidential talks fell apart several times over the next decade. Then, 2 years ago, a new regional EPA chief in the Trump administration forced the parties back to the negotiating table. The pressure worked. In January 2018, they reached a conceptual agreement and revealed parts of the cleanup plan in the works to the public last year. Since then, however, the parties have missed multiple deadlines set by EPA to finish up the fine print. Sesso says it's not the who and what, but the how involved with all the technical elements of the remedy that have taken additional time to hammer out.
So there's a lot of work that would normally have been done after the consent decree was signed that is now done beforehand. And I think that makes it that much stronger because now there's no secrets. It's not like, well, what were we thinking? You know, what were we going to do? And now a lot of those specifics are incorporated right into the statement of work.
The draft consent decree announced this week still has a long way to go before it's set in stone. The complex and highly technical deal now has to be reviewed and approved by senior officials at the Department of Justice, Environmental Protection Agency, the state of Montana, Atlantic Richfield, and Butte Silver Bow. Superfund coordinator John Sesso says once the higher-ups at DOJ and EPA sign off on the deal, he'll have the green light to share more of its actual contents, including financial details, with the public and Butte Silver Bow's Council of Commissioners, who get to vote on whether or not to sign it.
That probably will commence no later than a month from now and take as long as we need for us to feel comfortable that we're making a decision based on an informed citizenry and an informed governing body.
But a group of activists in Butte focused on creating a free-flowing first mile of Silver Bow Creek in the center of town wants the local government to take one more step. Northy Trethaway is a spokesperson with the Restore Our Creek Coalition.
It only makes common sense to make sure that this creek that we've been so ardently working towards over the past 4 years with this community, that potential still is there for that creek, just as they said it would be.
ROCC has been assured by the Superfund parties that the cleanup deal won't prevent a creek in the future. The coalition is currently conducting an EPA-funded study to, as they say, prove whether their vision of a meandering creek is in fact compatible with the new cleanup plan. Now they're asking Butte's Council of Commissioners to wait until the results of their creek study are out in December before they vote on the final Superfund deal.
All our point is that it's better to have all the information up front before you sign off, because you hate to see that something is not possible after the fact, after things are signed, because then it's harder to do something about it.
If and when the consent decree is approved by all of the Superfund parties, it will then be lodged with a federal court. Then it's up to U.S. District Judge Sam Haddon to release it for a formal 30-day public comment period. I'm Nora Sachs, Montana Public Radio.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds Monday morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.